Hello and welcome back to another episode of Open Floor. I'm Andrew Sharp, and on the other line, Ben Golliver. What's up, man?
Not too much, Andrew. I mean, there's three words that I want to say right off the top. I think you know what those three words are, related to the NCAA title game and really the entire tournament in general. Told you so. Kind of called that, didn't I? UNC, like I guaranteed before the tournament, pretty easily won the whole thing, didn't they?
That's true, man. You and Barack Obama called it from the start. Your 30 seconds of college basketball research really paid off. I'm proud of you, man.
Don't even give me that credit. It was a snap decision. I'd say I made it in less than the time it takes like Derrick Rose to get from the three-point line to the rim.
Yeah.
After his surgery.
Well, look, last night's college basketball game probably made most NBA fans grateful for the NBA, and I don't think many people want to talk that much about college basketball, but I want to talk about it a little bit because I spent the day, I watched the game with Markelle Fultz and his family last night for a Sports Illustrated video feature.
Wait. Are you serious? You actually did this or you're just like pretending it was like some other guy? He just said he was Markelle Fultz.
I like, for the sake of the podcast, that you're pretending to find out about this just now. But yes.
Wait, number one projected overall pick, Markelle Fultz from Washington. You hung out with him. Wait a minute. Was this the special draft project that you teased last week?
This was one of the special draft projects, yes. And it was...
Oh, my God.
Yeah, it was a video project that will also have a print component to it. And so I'm going to write more about Fultz maybe later this week, maybe next week. But bottom line is, he was a lot of fun. And I got to...
I have one question right off the top for you about him, though.
What's that?
I mean, you had to go into yesterday with your expectations sky high. I mean, you've been like liking this guy's game for years. You mentioned the DC and Seattle angles at virtually every turn. Those are your connections. I imagine this was your dream setup in terms of being able to talk to a guy on the day of the title, the number one pick. Did it disappoint or was it like dream fulfilled?
Well, first of all, we should underscore how awful that college basketball game was last night. I'm a Carolina fan. And even as a Carolina fan, I was watching it like, oh my God, like I don't ever want to watch college basketball refs again because they really like hijacked the game. So considering how bad the game was, it was great to be able to be there with Markelle and his family and like talk to them and listen to them like crack jokes the entire time. So that added an additional layer to it that was fun. And as far as expectations, I honestly had very low expectations or none at all because this all sort of like happened towards the end of last week. The opportunity came up and like I just was sort of rolling with it. And so we went down to George Washington University in downtown DC and I got to watch him work out and go through, like he got back to DC on Sunday. So he's just now starting his like pre-draft workouts and he worked out for 3.5 hours. And it was cool to see that process too.
3.5 hours. How long has it been combined that you've worked out for 3.5 hours? Like the last 6 months?
It was pretty humbling, to be honest with you, because they were doing a bunch of different things where like he did a pool workout, he did a boxing workout and some weight work, and like any portion of his little circuit yesterday would have been enough to I would have felt accomplished for the week and then maybe like come back in 10 days and work out again. But yeah, he was just sort of running through it. And it's crazy, like, you just forget how hard some of these guys work. Like, the stuff he was doing, like, at one point they did a drill where you basically have to do, like, push-ups up and down the court. So you, like, move 6 inches with every push-up. And he went, like, to half court and back, doing push-ups up and back. Which, I don't know if it's making sense as I describe it, but it was really, really difficult. I posted a video on Instagram of him shooting laying flat on his back also, which was he had to do at the end of the workout, which is like after 3 hours of like beating the crap out of your body to then have to get shots up lying flat on the court is pretty unbelievable. So it was just kind of interesting to see how they train.
Well, let me ask you this. When he was doing his actual basketball work, did you have that feeling in your head, which, you know, you often get when you see guys up close and really in an extended situation for the first time, of like, oh yeah, this dude's legit? Like, did you have that feeling?
A little bit. I mean, it's hard because you don't want to make...
Uh-oh.
Look.
Are we going to change the mock draft here?
No, we're not changing the mocks. But you also... I was wary of turning into like a Yi Jian Lin scout. I forget. How do you pronounce his name?
Yeah, it sounded close enough.
Yeah, maybe it's E. It's, well, either way, we all remember the chair workouts. And so I was not going to let myself be blown away by Markel Fultz in like an empty gym doing shooting drills. But he, I mean, like, just in terms of his frame, like, he's pretty much everything you would want in a guard today. And then, yeah, we got to spend some time together back at his house, and I got to meet his mom, who is delightful. Pretty much the polar opposite of LeVar Ball is Ebony Fultz, Markel's mom. She was great. She hosted us, cooked us cupcakes. So, yeah, it was a fun night, you know? I think, all in all, it was a good 8 hours with Markel.
Yeah, well, the contrast you're drawing between his parents and LeVar is interesting, because I've kind of noticed that the Ball family, it's a lot of bluster. You know, it's like Charles Barkley-style bluster, whereas, you know, we're getting more of a speak softly and carry a big stick vibe from Fultz. I mean, he'll just kind of respond to all of the Ball stuff with, like, the eye emojis on Twitter. Like, that's all he'll do. And for some reason, that actually, like, follows through and almost, like, carries up his side of this conversation. He's, like, a subtweeting expert. So I kind of like that approach. I'm going to be tracking that as we get closer. And if we see if this 1-2 race, you know, does crystallize, as some people expect, in terms of the top of the lottery order. But breaking news, I saw Andrew Sharp's latest mock draft. You didn't even have Ball in your top two, did you?
No, well, I think Ball is going to go to the Lakers if they're in that top three. I don't think he'll end up with the Suns. But, I mean, basically 2 through 4, Jason Tatum, Josh Jackson, and Lonzo Ball are sort of interchangeable to me, because they're all really good. They all have some question marks. And it's just going to depend on how the lottery shakes out in terms of where they go.
Got you. So, okay, well, so real quick, in terms of this title game, though, I mean, I don't know. Fouling three-point shooters, leaving three-point shooters open early in the game, actually having the offensive rebound. I mean, a lot of these things just don't really pass the smell test for me in terms of, like, quality basketball. I mean, did you feel like – you said you're a Carolina fan a minute ago. I mean – like, I think, didn't you tell me one time you had Raymond Felton's face tattooed on your shoulder blade or something like that?
Look, that 05 team was probably my favorite basketball team of all time. It just, like, hit me at the perfect point in life, where I was like 16 when they all got recruited, and I was just obsessed with Carolina basketball. I had a Rashad McCants autograph. Like, there were a lot of that, just that was my sweet spot right there. So I don't feel as much of a connection to Carolina basketball now. So I was a little bit detached last night. But yeah, I like just the pace of play was rough. Like, they could never get into a rhythm. I don't know how many times. It feels like every year around this time of year, we get into a spot where like the entire world is complaining about these games being played in football stadiums. And somehow the NCAA just keeps doing it just to sell like an extra 40,000 tickets for like a $1 billion sporting event. So that pisses me off. The refs piss me off. But as a Carolina fan, I am really happy for Roy Williams. I think like last year, what was most upsetting about the Villanova game was that like I worried that that was going to be Roy's last shot at a title. And he's a great coach who is a really good dude, and I'm happy that he got his ring.
Yeah, he's done a really nice job steering the ship through an academic scandal that you didn't mention. But I guess where I was going with the whole Felton thing was, do you think there's fans out there of a certain age, like, you know, the 16-year-old Sharp version of yourself, who feel that way towards this team? I'm having a hard time grasping what, you know, a diehard Carolina fan would really like gravitate towards with this group, you know. And think Raftery had a comment on the broadcast like, well, we've seen some great Carolina teams and this isn't one of them during the middle of the final game.
Well,
which they won.
They had a ton of talent, but they like in this tournament, they never really played a great game. I guess, I mean, maybe against Butler, but they never really like turned it on. And then like as objective among like objective fans, they just weren't like very much fun. And they didn't have any like sort of magnetic personalities or someone with a magnetic game. Like Josh Jackson was sort of a good avatar for the team in general. They did a lot of different things well, but like isn't going to like blow your socks off. And you know, I think Carolina fans are just going to gravitate towards like the victory. This team beat almost everybody all year, and that's all that really matters to like diehards. But I get what you're talking about. There's no Raymond Felton. There's not even like a Tyler Hansbrough or a Ty Lawson. So it's tougher to like go head over heels for this team.
Yeah, I like Jackson's game. I mean, I think that he has a chance to stick and be a player. If he gets, you know, right system, right fit, people who know how to use him, you know, complimentary option. His length really caused problems. Hey, you know one thing I did think about that title game, though?
What?
So Nigel Williams-Goss is from the Portland area.
Uh-huh.
So I went back into my emails, and I found from 2008, I was all excited because apparently somebody had rated him the number one eighth grader in the country, and he was from Clackamas, so, you know, shout out Clackamas. And I saw him at some AAU tournament, and I was like, oh, this guy's the real deal. And I did some research. Apparently, his dad was, like, teaching him Chinese at that point so that he'd, you know, potentially have more marketing opportunities. And then to realize, like, how long his journey from that, you know, basically he was already being recruited in eighth grade to last night. And then to have the whole thing end with an ankle tweak on a completely fluke play down the stretch kind of screwed up their last couple possessions. You know, I mean, he couldn't get up on the one possession. He couldn't get his lift. On the other one, he left a jumper short. I mean, and he bounced from school to school. I mean, that's basically 9 years ago, the first time I saw him. And he was already, you know, pretty prominent at that point of his life. So to have that entire journey culminate in an amazing dream run to the finals with Gonzaga, and then kind of torpedoed by like the flukiest ankle injury ever. It was cool to see him fight through it. And it was also cool that, you know, his coach let him kind of keep running the offense because he was pretty much doing everything for them down the stretch. But still, I felt bad for him. And,
that's a really
he
good
was
point.
Almost about to he was almost about to drink for free for life in Portland, but no.
I had totally forgotten about that. And I did feel, I mean, obviously, like as things got tight at the end, I was more just sort of living in fear of a Villanova repeat. So I was sort of like, I was just locked in, like, please close this out, Carolina. But there was about 30 seconds of just intense sympathy for Nigel Williams-Goss, because that's like, that's the worst case scenario. I still can't believe that happened. And you could see him trying to walk it off, and you could tell that he wasn't really going to be able to, although he made a nice move on his missed jumper. So like, I don't know. It was rough. What did you think of Karnowski real quick before we moved to the NBA?
Yeah, I mean, he's a big boy.
Can we get him? Find him a place somewhere in the league? Like, I realize that fives are going out of style, but like, I just want him in
How
the
did
NBA
I know this was
somehow.
Coming? Well, what I was thinking is we need to kind of get him and Nurkic's dad together and maybe they can have like a bridge club or something. Yeah. They look like they'd be best buddies and have a lot to talk about.
For real.
But yeah, no, I don't have a ton of takes about him. I thought kind of quiet, brings the ball down a lot. You know, he's getting kind of swiped and sniped by the smalls kind of diving down. He didn't have a ton of room to operate. I could rant about college basketball and why it isn't fun to watch all day long. I mean,
All right.
I don't know if we really want
to
hear that.
It's time to wrap it up. Congrats, Carolina. It's a slow point in the NBA season, which is why we just spent 10 minutes on college basketball. And yeah, I will have more details on Fultz. Honestly, what happened last night, I got home at 1:30 in the morning and then had to spend the next 3 hours finishing a mock draft that I was behind on. So I have to sort out some more thoughts and get my written piece together. But we will have a more extended conversation on Fultz as we go.
I love that Fultz is like going for like a midnight marathon run through the streets of DC as part of his 17-hour workout. You're like, hey man, like I'm exhausted just watching you work out. I need to go home and work on my mock draft.
Yeah, exactly. You know what else?
Wow.
I will say this. So Fultz has been liking tweets on Twitter. Have you noticed that at all?
No, that's you're pretty deep in the game when you're noticing
that. All right, fair enough. All right, so it has become like a story though. Like places like SB Nation, Bleacher Report. I'm sure SI has done a couple stories on it. Like he's conspicuously liking tweets where Lonzo Ball says he's better than him. And all I will say is that it's impossible to bring up someone else's Twitter likes in an interview without feeling like incredibly creepy.
He's a subtweet king of the world, man. If you put together his likes and his eye emojis, I think this could be the difference between the number one and the number two pick. And I don't think you should be afraid of it next time you talk to him. Just be like, you know, put it all out there.
Yeah.
I've been stalking you on the internet. Okay. I have many questions about you. Just get it out there. He'll appreciate it. He understands.
Yeah. You know, I tried to explain. I was like, you know, you've been liking posts and I know it's weird to talk about this, but other people have been writing about it. And then I realized I was just like explaining too much, and but we got through it, and he does enjoy the rivalry with Lonzo. I'll say that. But let's move on. At halftime of that game, I noticed a story about the Orlando Magic, which frankly is incredible to me that this really happened in 2017, and that the Magic are allegedly sketching out their off-season wish list on a whiteboard. What do you think about what's going on in Orlando?
I mean, this is a huge leak. First of all, I kind of actually feel bad for them, but I have some experience actually. Like, this kind of a thing had happened a couple times when I was in Portland.
Uh-huh.
So I'm going to tell you three quick stories and then we'll kind of talk about the Magic. So way back in the day, I had just gotten a good camera, like a DSLR or whatever, for the first time.
Yeah.
I was really excited about it. I got a nice big lens on it. So I went to the practice facility and I was like shooting photos of the practice. And I was just randomly like kind of like messing around with the zoom and all that. I happened to take a picture of their main executive at the time. I'm not going to name him. He happened to be holding a manila folder. On the manila folder, once I got home and looked at my zoomed in photo, there was free agency targets. There was Paul Allen, the owner of Microsoft or former owner of Microsoft, whatever, his direct phone number to call him to like discuss plans. There was lists of players on the current team that they were thinking about trading.
Uh-huh.
And there was also like they had divvied up the free agency list of guys who like the coach at the time, Nate McMillan, was supposed to call. Somebody else was supposed to call. So I basically had this treasure trove of information all from this manila folder that I had taken a picture of from probably like 75 feet away. So that was number one.
So did you get number in touch two, with did you get in touch with Paul Allen from there?
No, but I actually did put his phone number in my phone so I could just pretend like I had Paul Allen on speed dial.
Great. I mean, I feel okay. Like Paul Allen is a crazy rich person. Like as crazy as any rich person in the world, Paul Allen is right up there. And I feel like it'd be a good investment on your part to see if you can trick him into hiring you to run, like, maybe you could run the Seahawks. Like, maybe you could run his yacht or something. Like, just get in the mix with Paul Allen.
Yeah, he's got some submarines. That'd be pretty cool to be the head of a submarine. But okay, so that was number one. Number two was a little bit more innocuous. So I was just kind of like walking around waiting for practice to kind of open up for the interviews. We were in the gym and the assistant GM at the time was like on the phone in his office with his blinds open, and usually the blinds are closed. So I just kind of walked around. Yeah, I'll admit it. Maybe I was snooping a little bit. And there was a whiteboard, much like the Magic's whiteboard, and it had their top 10 draft picks in terms of like the order that they would take them. And for whatever reason, I remember it was the year that John Henson was in the draft because he was like really high on their board. And I was like, oh, that's interesting. John Henson, like they really like this guy. So I was like marking down their entire order in order, like on my phone, like typing it in quickly. And then his phone call ended. He turned around and saw what I was doing. And he just like twisted his blinds so fast, like angrily shut so that I couldn't like finish the list. So that was episode number two. Episode number three, Rich Cho hosted a fan workout and pizza party at the practice facility. It was like very nice of him. And he like made all the fans like sign non-disclosure agreements or I guess like release of liability agreements, like if they got injured, because he was like putting them through this crazy workout. Nothing quite like you went through with Markel Fultz, but you know, a pretty good workout.
Right.
And then at the end of it, after they had the pizza party and the ice cream, and he like showed this whole presentation. He like let people come into his office and take pictures with him. But the problem was his salary board was like up in his office, where like every single player's salary was, on a little peg, a colored peg. And so he started feeling really uncomfortable with people taking pictures of the salary board in the background, because obviously that's sort of like it's like technically it's like private information that, you know, you're not supposed to share. I mean, everybody has access to it, but, you know, it's not something that teams want to divulge.
Yeah.
And so all these fans were just like snapping selfies with them, you know, with Rich Cho or whatever, with like the salary in the background. So he like rushed to like cover it up. And I thought he actually did a pretty good job with it. And I don't think anything leaked from that. But that was the third time that happened. So my point from all these stories is I feel kind of bad for the Magic. This isn't a case of like somebody being completely incompetent in terms of like letting this leak. But I want to ask you, in all of those cases, I made kind of a point to not put the information out. Like I kind of made an editorial decision of like,
yeah,
I'm going to use this information indirectly.
Right.
Yeah. Like if you were me, would you have posted not Paul Allen's phone number necessarily, but like, hey, here's like the Blazers 5-point guard targets that summer, you know?
Yeah, definitely not. You don't want to throw that out there. There's no need to sort of like put that out in the public, but I feel like this was a player. And my takeaway from your anecdotes is that yes, this does happen, and it's more understandable than most people realize. But for me, I am more disturbed by the fact that they might try to trade, or that someone in the front office even had the idea to trade Aaron Gordon for Dario Saric. Like that to me just underscores the idea that the Magic have no idea what they're doing.
That would be rough. And we don't want to necessarily rush to that presumption. So officially, the statement from Magic's GM, Rob Hennigan, was that it wasn't indicative of plans. They were listing options, including some of which other teams have inquired about.
Okay.
So that could be a situation where like Philly said, hey, we'll offer you Saric for Gordon or something.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
maybe that's what it is. Because look, Aaron Gordon is Dario Saric is great. And has been fantastic over the last 2 months. And there's not a lot to criticize, but he's older than Aaron Gordon. He's less athletic. And Gordon is like the one piece in Orlando where you can envision him being a really solid piece on a winning team. And they've screwed around with his minutes and with his role down there. And so if they were to give up on him now, it would be pretty disheartening. Although I guess kind of everything in Orlando has been disheartening over the last few years, so it would be par for the course.
Well, I know this, that he's got some real fans in that organization, Gordon does.
Okay.
So that's why I'm a little bit skeptical on some of the trade stuff. But let me just read a couple sentences real quick from Josh Robbins, who's a real straight shooting beat writer for the Magic. And I can just imagine him being in this situation of, like, again, the ethical dilemma of like, look, this is out there. People are talking about it on Twitter. I have to cover it because it's news. But also, this feels like a crazy violation of privacy and really damaging to the organization. So at the end of his story, this is how Robbins put it. He goes, lists like these are common among teams, but they usually aren't shared through social media, accidentally or otherwise. It's like brilliant. That's true. They usually aren't. But no, I think that these lists look pretty legit to me. I mean, if you're them, they've talked about trying to get more versatile. They definitely know they need to get more spacing. Everybody would agree with that. I mean, especially if you've got Peyton as your point guard, you have to basically spread everything out around him.
Yeah.
And even if you don't, you know, they got to figure out options. So the fact that they're looking at these quote unquote hybrids or spread bigs is not surprising in the slightest. So I don't know. I'm not sure if there's more to take away from the Orlando other than I think people would assume that they would already want these things. I don't think that's a big surprise.
Yeah. Well, it's a continuation of just a rough year for the Magic faithful. And you know what? As far as the Elfrid Payton thing is concerned, maybe stop planning the future around Elfrid Payton. I think he's a good player, but like if you're having to orient the whole roster around his game, like I don't think he's worth that. And they've been making the, they had previously had been making the same mistake with Vucevic. And at some point, it might help if Orlando just gives up on some of these guys and don't give up on Aaron Gordon. That would be my prescription for the Magic.
You know, it's also weird that the player was actually in a position to be taking a picture in front of this board, because it's sort of like, hey, like, welcome to the team. Here's all the people who we're trying to get so that we don't have you. I mean, it's not really that, yeah. But that's kind of, you know, how it feels. Like, I don't think teams would divulge these lists with their own players usually. Yeah. So that part's a little strange to me, too.
Well, I feel like we've covered the Magic then. We've got some very important business to get to. But first, let's take a quick break. Today's episode of Open Floor is brought to you by T-Mobile. Opening day came and went Sunday and Monday, and baseball is back. And if you love baseball, you need T-Mobile, because they're giving away a free year of MLB.TV Premium. That's a $112 value, absolutely free, only for T-Mobile customers. With T-Mobile One, unlimited data means unlimited baseball. Ben, have you watched a second of baseball since it came back?
Absolutely. I'm a big baseball fan, really tracking it very closely this year. You know, the Dodgers, kind of like my new hometown team, they're undefeated, on track, I think, to go 162-0 this season. And look, the nice thing about this T-Mobile deal is that it's really simple. Step one, you get T-Mobile. You should be doing that anyways. They have an amazing, reliable connection. I'm talking to you right now, Andrew, on a T-Mobile line. Step two, download that T-Mobile Tuesdays app. Everybody knows how to download an app. It's 2017. Nice and easy. Step three, on April 4th, which is Tuesday, you can get your free year of MLB.TV Premium in the T-Mobile Tuesdays app. So go ahead, check it out. I mean, you really want to do this. If you want to watch baseball like me, if you want to follow the Dodgers like I do on their trek towards the first undefeated season in Major League Baseball history.
Wherever you are in the United States, you can get out-of-market games, stats, highlights, and more. Follow the Dodgers, follow the Nats. Remember, April 4th, get your free year of MLB.TV Premium with T-Mobile. Check it out. Baseball is a wonderful sport that we love here at Open Floor.
This is Open Floor with Andrew Sharp and Ben Golliver.
The road to the NFL draft has the same landmarks every year, but no two prospects take the exact same path to draft night.
A little bit more of a songwriter than a singer.
There's people who eat themselves out of the NFL, and that will not be me.
I'm writing this letter to you today because I'm from England and I moved here 2 years ago.
I want to make history, man.
I'm Eric Single, and over the next month, Sports Illustrated will set the stage for the 2017 NFL Draft with a podcast that takes you inside the heads of some of this year's most fascinating prospects. Each pick is a player. Each player has a story. Subscribe to Draft Season today, wherever podcasts are available.
Let's get back to it. We need to talk about Yusuf Nurkic, because...
Oh my God. That's one of the worst curses I've ever seen.
Well, look, I don't know. Do we take responsibility for jinxing him, or is it more TNT's fault the other night running the Sam Bowie, Bill Walton, Greg Oden, Yusuf Nurkic graphic?
I mean, this is a real tricky one to parse, because... Normally, I would have blamed TNT for that. And on the podcast, I was kind of hinting that I wanted to blame TNT for doing that because it was pretty much an inexcusable decision to throw him on that graphic.
Yo, so you
but
know what?
Then I think it's actually our fault. I see fault for you and I actually see fault for me. But what'd you want to say real quick?
All right. So when you talked about that graphic, you were hinting that maybe they were jinxing Nurkic. And I could sense it, and it just, I never took it seriously because in my mind, like last Thursday night and into Friday, Yusuf Nurkic was just indestructible and could never fail. And it didn't even occur to me that this could ever go wrong. And so I think I have to own some responsibility as well, because I forgot that Yusuf Nurkic is mortal.
Well, look. First of all, I mean, you really want to be a Pacific Northwesterner. I mean, you're trying pretty hard. I mean, this is the difference between sort of a wannabe, like, you know, outsider who kind of covets what we've got up there in the Pacific Northwest and someone who's actually from there is you would never think a center is indestructible if you're from, you know, Portland or that part of the country. You're always waiting for the other shoe to drop. So, first of all, you bear some responsibility because of the karma factor. I mean, you were celebrating way too much, dancing in the end zone, you know, spiking the football for basically 3 months straight. So that's your bad. But what I said on the podcast Friday was like, wow, what an amazing curse breaker, you know, because he had played so well despite that graphic. And within like 3 hours of that podcast posting, it was proven that he was not a curse breaker. I think ultimately that puts a lot of responsibility on me, because if I hadn't said that, maybe, you know, there's just no curse and we just go forward. Maybe I shouldn't have mentioned the curse. You know what I mean? Like, maybe that was playing with fate a little bit. So I think we should take this one together for the team.
Yeah.
Like, Blazers fans clearly are like, what is going on? And, you know, they're trying to talk themselves into the idea that like somehow he's going to come back in the playoffs with a non-displaced fracture. I mean, to me, you probably don't want to mess with that one.
That's what I was thinking too. It's like, once you hear the words fracture, you think, all right, look, maybe shut it down here. Maybe play it safe. You've lucked into a center who really makes a lot of sense for the future. I don't know if you need him back for the playoffs. You're not going to beat the Warriors anyways. Just chill. I mean, who knows what they're actually planning on doing. I should add that I put Nurkic's name in the title of the podcast, even though we only talked about him for about 5 minutes. So that was just... just sort of solidifying our jinx powers on that one. Apologies to Yusuf Nurkic and Blazers fans everywhere. This one's on us.
Yeah. I mean, and Portland's like rushed guys back too. Like Brandon Roy rushed back in the playoffs 1 year. And, you know, there was a real debate about whether he should have done that and whether that took some time off of his, you know, his peak. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. I think you got to be real careful. And just the idea of playing on a broken leg, even if it's not that painful as he was claiming, seems like, you know, caution's in order. But I mean, I also understand their approach of being like, look, we're going to reevaluate it in 2 weeks, just because, I mean, emotionally, you want the team to keep its head together. You know, they still have to solidify that playoff spot. It's not clinched. I mean, it's still a race with Denver. If they were to fall apart, you know, that would be the real disaster and fall out of the playoff picture. I don't think that's going to happen. I mean, they seem like they've handled the initial response pretty well, getting a couple wins. So, you know, they're tracking towards that eight seed, but still. Tough break.
Yeah. What else do we have here from the weekend? Should we talk about the Warriors?
I was going to say, I'm actually kind of surprised, because you've been the fear-monger-in-chief for the Cavaliers, and we saw LeBron and Tristan Thompson, who you can argue are maybe the two most important players on that team in terms of, like, indispensability. You know, like, if Tristan goes down, their defense, you know, is going to be really up a creek, or if he's just not in the picture or whatever, you know, they're going to be in a tough spot. Obviously, LeBron's the most indispensable player on earth. These two guys are screaming at each other during a tight game, during an overtime period of a very tight game, and yet you haven't even mentioned it. So what gives there? I mean, I thought you were really worried about the Cleveland, and this is a very obvious blow-up, probably the biggest blow-up we've seen maybe of the post-David Blatt era, right? Why aren't you freaking out?
We covered my Cavs skepticism remains unchanged for a lot of the reasons that we mentioned, most of which boil down to, like, the roster beyond LeBron is not very good right now, and that's going to be an issue. I don't think the infighting is an issue. I think they'll be on the same page, like, emotionally, but just it's a sort of underwhelming roster right now. If I'm looking at the Cavs, like, I would be more freaked out by the fact that LeBron played 50 minutes in a game against Paul George. Like, I understand that it wound up being a lot of fun to watch. I didn't catch the game as it happened because I was watching the first quarter of Wizards Warriors, but, like, I watched Twitter freak out over it, and I know a lot of people loved it, but as an outsider, I'm just like, why would you ever play LeBron that much in a meaningless game in March? Like, that to me just doesn't track.
Yeah, I think they've reached a point now where it's like they don't feel like these games are meaningless. Like, I think that they've probably struggled for long enough where they're like, we need to get some wins. And that's kind of a weird place to be in, because you would hope they wouldn't be there. I just think if you're going to make the argument, as others have, that Cleveland is somehow in a much tougher spot than people realize, this is the kind of red flag that would suggest they feel the same way. You know what I mean? Like, and you shouldn't necessarily read into, you know, every little body language thing that happens on the court. But that was a legitimate argument that lasted for what, like 45 seconds? I mean, those guys were going back and forth. And of course, they cleaned it up. They're pros afterwards. And they kind of tried to bury the hatchet. LeBron said all the right things. Tristan kind of said all the right things. But that was serious finger pointing.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's something to watch, because if they hit adversity unexpectedly in one of these earlier playoff rounds, are they going to crumble like that, or are they going to pull together like they did in the past two playoff runs? That's kind of my question. So it was unusual. I mean, I haven't really been that worried about Cleveland, but that was one situation where, you know, kind of alarm bell started to go off a little bit, because that's not normal for a championship team to go to that level, especially if Draymond's not involved.
Yeah.
And you know, Tristan's not a jerk, you know? Like, he's not out there trying
to
pick fights with people.
Exactly. Like, Tristan is not one of the guys that you have to sort of scream at to keep in line. Like, he has kind of handled his business throughout this whole Cavs run. So that is, if you're looking for red flags, that would be one. My issue with the Cavs, again, is just more talent specific. But I will say this, like, at 7 o'clock on Sunday, I checked the Pacers Cavs score and thought to myself, like, man, I can't think of a team that's just more open about hating basketball right now than the Indiana Pacers. And then, like, they took the Cavs to the wire. Like, it's not a good sign that the Cavs are struggling with just miserable teams that are, like, on the fringe of the playoffs. Like, really, we haven't really talked about how awful the bottom half of the East is, because it's kind of depressing, but everyone beyond, let's say the Bucks are not in that category, but like the Hawks, the Bulls, the Pacers, it's the Pistons, like that whole playoff race is just miserable.
Yeah, there's five teams in the East and everybody else is terrible.
Yeah.
That's pretty much a fact of life. Hey, talking about your Wizards real quick, you mentioned the Wizards Warriors.
Uh-huh.
I never thought I would say this, but I love that Brandon Jennings and I were aligned on something, and that rarely, rarely happens. But look, when the I'm Getting Mine generation decides to go out there and shoot a three-pointer in garbage time with, what was it, like a 20-something point lead, and it's JaVale McGee of all people, yes, you should shove that guy in the chest and send a message. Didn't you love that?
You know what? I really, really did love that. I will say that, like, I'm a little worried about the Wizards. They're kind of turning into the East Coast version of the Clippers. There's, like, a lot of complaints about the officiating, some of which are valid. Like, I watched the Jazz-Wizards game on Friday night, and I think it was Friday night. It was one of the worst officiated games I've ever seen in my life. Like, I stayed up and ignored my wife for like an hour during the second half and was so upset at the end, because it was like, all right, well, so I just stayed up to watch this bullshit officiating job basically decide the game. That aside, though, like, Wall, every single game, is talking to the refs nonstop. After the game, he's complaining about the refs. It's not the best look. And I hope that it sort of resolves itself at some point before the playoffs, because, like, I don't want them to be talking about the refs after a playoff game. Like, that's just, it's not how you handle your business. Having said that, there were also complaints about the Warriors kind of showboating, which, not my favorite thing. Like, just if you lose by 20, the other team should be able to do whatever they want. But again, having said that, I am all for any scenario which involves JaVale McGee getting body checked out of bounds. And if Brandon Jennings is going to be the tone setter for the playoffs, who, like, throws in a couple flagrants in every series, I'm all for it, especially since he's like 160 pounds.
See, this is what I mean, though. Devin Booker muddying the waters, you know, and all of a sudden the standards start to relax a little bit. And now it's all of a sudden it's okay for a center to shoot a three-pointer when he's got a gigantic lead in. No, we need to be setting the line. We need to be setting hard lines here when it comes to sportsmanship. And I love that Brandon Jennings was the one who upheld these virtues. And hey, by the way, on the Wizards,
yeah,
they're just an expressive team in general, man. Like, it's not just that they talk to the refs; like, they'll shout at each other, yell at each other, kind of point fingers during games. But it doesn't really necessarily seem like when they're squabbling with each other that it's like mean spirited. It just seems like they have a lot of guys who like to chirp, you know. And maybe that's what happens when you've got Markieff Morris. Like, maybe that's just like part of it.
Yeah, well, and Wall is expressive too. I think that a lot of them take on his personality, which is generally a really good thing. They're just, the ref stuff can go overboard a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, and do you think maybe there's part of it where he's laying some groundwork for the playoffs, where he wants to make sure he's getting superstar treatment during the first round series and beyond? Because, you know, I think that you can make a pretty compelling narrative that he's still one of the more underrated guys around the league. You know, like, everyone rushed to the Isaiah Thomas for MVP thing, like, you know, Wall's got a very similar case. If I had to rank him 1 to 5, I'd probably have Wall over Thomas at 5. He hasn't gotten a ton of talk in that vein.
Yeah.
In terms of his playoff resume, it's strong but not super deep. They weren't there last year, and I think if you're him, you got to live at the free throw line during the postseason. And I kind of wonder whether how much of this is genuine emotion and how much is he trying to work the refs a little bit. It's something we've seen from Paul George in the past and a few other guys where it's sort of like, hey, treat me like the star that I think I am rather than just, you know, another all-star.
Yeah, so I do think that a lot of it is strategic on his part, but I also think that there are smarter, more diplomatic ways to go about it. Like, you look at the best players in the league are a little bit more devious about the way they work the refs. Like Chris Paul, LeBron, basically every superstar, though, just like knows how to sort of massage the refs and criticize them without disrespecting them. And Wall has yet to sort of like manage that balance very well. Like he'll call refs out on Twitter and like after the technical didn't get rescinded this week, I think he said like no surprise there. And it just like nonstop he is talking about the officiating, and that I don't think is going to be like a successful strategy to endear yourselves to refs. And you know, it may not matter. It probably doesn't matter. But just as a general rule, like I kind of would love Scott Brooks to be like, you know what, just chill on the refs. Like if we win 2 playoff series, we'll get all the calls we need over the next few years.
Yeah, I actually think it's going to matter a lot, especially when you look at Toronto, Boston, and Washington, just some of the personalities that are on that team. I mean, Isaiah Thomas like flying across the court to point his finger in people's faces. The funeral back and forth. The fact that Markieff Morris is going to have to try to not get ejected from, you know, any games during a 7-game series.
So
you look at Toronto. I mean, they got a lot of chippy dudes. I mean, start with PJ Tucker and go down the list. Kyle Lowry's always flopping all over the court. I like Kyle Lowry's game, but, you know, certainly he does that. There is a lot of potential for referee controversies in whoever those two teams meet in the second round. So at this point, I'm going to say that Wall is playing chess and he understands that. And he's just trying to kind of get himself a leg up going into that.
Yeah.
But maybe not.
I hope it works. I hope it works. Isaiah is a great example of someone who works the refs really, really well. Both Lowry and DeRozan do a good job, and hopefully Wall will get the calls. As a Wizards fan, it's one thing that I've noticed where I'm like, I love this team, but man, I wish they would just like chill on the refs issue.
The Clippers comparison is perfect because that's what everyone who's watched Clippers games for the last 7 seasons has felt. So yes, maybe you are in the exact same spot. Yeah, and we'll see. I mean, it's part of why these teams implode, though. I mean, that is a real thing. Like when you get that chip on your shoulder of like, hey, we're playing 5-on-8. I mean, whether you are or not, it takes you out of what you're trying to do, and we've seen that with, you know, this Clippers core before for sure.
All right. Well, I have 2 more questions here. Number one, watching the Cavs struggle, and speaking of Isaiah Thomas, how much have you wondered about how the East would be looking right now with a Jimmy Butler trade or a Paul George trade?
Yeah. I mean, I've been thinking about it. I thought they should have made the trades at the time. I said that months before the trade deadline. I said that at the trade deadline. I said that right after the trade deadline, and I'm going to stick to that. I mean, I think you go for it. I think that it was open enough where they could talk themselves into it. I think the very best counter argument that you can make if you're a Celtics fan is like, well, you know, there still wasn't a trade out there or even a pair of trades out there that was going to put them on Golden State's level. But so what? Go to the finals. Have a good time. You know, push them. Hope that somebody gets injured and maybe you can sneak a title out. I don't know. I still am skeptical that any team is on Cleveland's level in the East. I'm just going to repeat myself over and over on that one. But I do think that the door is open.
Yeah.
I mean, somebody could knock them out.
I'm skeptical that either Boston or Toronto or Washington is quite good enough to actually like kick the door down and beat the Cavs. But the Cavs are clearly more vulnerable now than we've seen them over the last few years. And like the door really is open, and it just pisses me off. I mean, I think the best counter argument you can make, and what I've heard from sources like in the immediate aftermath, they were Celtics people. So like, who knows what's true and what's not. But like maybe Paul George just wasn't available. But like you watch Paul George go toe to toe with LeBron, and I mean that was like fairly even, and it would have made the East playoffs so much more fun to have Boston like really even with Cleveland headed into this. And then also like if there is an upset, like a finals with Paul George on the Celtics would be a lot more interesting against the Warriors than like a Celtics team that basically goes in there and is guaranteed to lose in 5-6 games tops. So, I mean, it's a total hindsight issue, but I really feel like the trade deadline could turn out to be a missed opportunity for Boston.
No, I'm over here frothing at the mouth, just waiting for like if they face the Raptors and somebody like PJ Tucker wins a game, or like let's say Ibaka just like, you know, has like a 2010 or something like that. I mean, I'm so ready to write that column.
And
like,
not only that, look,
Boston's inactivity bites them, you know, comes back to bite them. Like that's, you know, that's a pretty easy column to write. And I really believe it. I mean, I think philosophically, like if you have a shot at the number one seed, and at that point they did. I mean, they knew they were going to be better down the stretch than they were early in the season. We all said that because of their injury issues, you know?
Yeah.
They were going to get right at some point, and they did. So their ceiling was there, and I just think they could have used a boost, even if it was a minor boost, you know? And that's why I think there's a lot of pressure on two people, Danny Ainge and Isaiah Thomas. Isaiah Thomas is going to have to carry this offense at a high level during the postseason. He's going to have to do it when everybody's keying on them, regardless, because they didn't bring him any help. And for Danny Ainge, if they don't make the Eastern Conference Finals, especially if they're the number one seed, by the way, if they don't make the Eastern Conference Finals, it's all blowing back on his decision or his indecision.
Yeah. I mean, the other factor here, and this leads in nicely to the last thing I wanted to do on this podcast, but if they get the number one pick, then it will all have been worth it. But that's a big risk. I mean, basically, Boston has a 25% chance, so it's a lot more likely that they won't get the number one pick, especially, like, I don't think things are going to go exactly to chalk this year. So it's tough. Markel Fultz, like a surefire star, would totally justify holding on to Jay Crowder and sort of playing the long game. But, like, they slide a little bit, it starts to get dicier, because then it's also a less valuable trade asset, and like who knows what the plan is. So that is all to say, let's simulate the lottery on Tankathon a couple times to close this out.
Okay, while you do that, just real quick, I don't agree with what you just said. I don't think that as long as they didn't trade this year's pick, I don't think that's a justification. And I think that they could have swung really good deals without trading this year's pick.
I don't know.
So that was going to be in their bag one way or the other.
I think they would have had to, to get Paul George or Jimmy Butler, they definitely would have had to include this pick, right?
But it wasn't all or nothing. I mean, there were other moves that they could have potentially made, you know, and that's my point is like, you know, you go back to like the Bogdanovich, the Tucker. I mean, there was other little minor upgrades. The Korver. I mean, they could have done something and they didn't.
All right. Well, just sim the lottery. And there you have it. The Celtics they stay at number one. So maybe it'll all work out for Danny Ainge in the end. The Suns are two. Lakers lose their pick. And the Sixers are picking at 3 and 4. And Orlando, the year of living the struggle continues for the Magic in this version of our reality as they slide to 5. The one thing I wrote about this today in the mock draft, the Sixers have like the nuclear option for the process in June. And depending on what happens in the lottery, like they could come away with 2 top 5 picks, potentially at number one, potentially at number two. Like they're going to be in the mix to really come into next year scary as hell, depending on whether they can steal that Lakers pick.
Well, the Lakers did them a big favor with the worst win of the season, taking down Memphis. Just an inexcusable win for a tanking team. Unbelievable. I saw something that basically argued that it changed their odds at keeping their pick by something like 5%, which that doesn't sound like a lot, but if it's going from like 50 to 45 or 55 to 50, I mean, that is a huge deal. In terms of being able to keep that top three protected pick, to just win a random game in early April that you definitely don't care about. So I don't know. I mean, it's almost to the point where like Luke Walton's going to have to put his team on a hunger strike or something, just not even take the court, maybe just forfeit games. They can't be accidentally winning. It's screwing with the plan.
It's really funny. I mean, we have really hit like the dog days of the regular season. Like I most people aren't really paying attention. But one of the most entertaining subplots over the final 10 days is watching Lakers fans lose their mind watching this team. Like, was the Grizzlies game was Sunday, I think, and Lakers fans were just disgusted as the Lakers closed out that win, and they were like,
"That's what I'm saying."
Yeah, so
it's the single worst win of the year. There's no question about it. I mean, inexcusable. I guess the flip side of that is it's good news for whoever gets Memphis in the first round, maybe, you know, and like that's a weird place to be losing to the Lakers, you know?
Yeah. Memphis has not looked great. The Lakers have never looked great for the last 3 years. And we'll see. I don't have a great feeling about them keeping the pick. I think we talked about this a couple weeks ago, but firing John Black, their lottery representative, who's come up huge over the last 2 years, is not a good sign. Like, it just isn't. I don't care how great Magic has been. Firing John Black was a bad idea before the lottery, and we'll see how it shakes out. And then I also am starting to, like, I just looking through the draft last night, I just started to realize, like, how well this could break for the Sixers. And it's all on the table. I don't know. But we got to go.
Well, I got one quick question on the Sixers for you, because you have laid out this dream scenario, this nuclear option.
Yeah.
So let's say they get two top five picks. Let's say they get the very best case scenario. They get the number one pick, and they get the Lakers at four, right? That's their very best case, right?
Yeah.
Who do you take with that pairing, given who they've got? Like, who are the pair of talents, assuming you keep both picks, you use both picks, to fit around? I guess their core right now would be considered Embiid, Saric, I don't know. I mean, obviously Simmons, Covington, are you throwing him in there? I mean, whoever else, who do you take with that one and the four? I mean, are you pretty locked into Fultz at one no matter what for them?
Yeah, Fultz is like head and shoulders above everyone else at one, especially for the Sixers, because they need a guard, and Fultz can actually play without the ball pretty well, and would be a nice fit alongside Ben Simmons. Which isn't necessarily true for some of the other point guards that are available in the top 10 and will be great, but just like you need to be able to shoot to play next to Simmons. I'm the closer we get, the more YouTube footage I've watched. Like, I really like Jason Tatum's game, and I've talked to some scouts who really like him, and like he would be a really nice option. I think, like, if the Sixers came away with only Jason Tatum, it would be tough to get like crazy excited about the draft. But if Jason Tatum is just sort of like a secondary addition, then you come away pretty thrilled. Like, it's just, there are so many good players in the top 10 here, not all of whom are going to be like franchise guys, but it's hard to imagine a better year to potentially have two top 10 picks.
I'm just kind of thinking about this. If your squad is Fultz, Simmons, Tatum, and Embiid, plus other pieces as you're going forward, I mean, that is ridiculously tantalizing. I mean, that's so good that if you're Jahlil Okafor, like, you don't even negotiate a rookie contract extension. Like, you just sign for the minimum so you can hang out with those guys.
Yeah, it could get pretty scary. And it to the point where, like, suddenly Embiid's health is not quite as crucial to the future.
Hey, don't do that. Yeah. Don't do that. Don't start hedging against Embiid. No,
I don't know.
Can't do that yet.
If anything, that's a reverse jinx. So we're good. The other thing, you know what I noticed writing the mock draft last night is, first of all, one day we should go through and read some of the entries, because it's so clear the players that I just like can't really talk myself into and can't figure out why the NBA values as much. Like, Tyler Lydon from Syracuse has been sort of a fixture in the first round all year, and I don't really get it. And there are a couple others. But the one thing that's crazy is you see all these guys, and the rule for at least half of the first round picks is just like, he could have a really successful career if we can teach him to shoot threes. And that's sort of like the make or break factor for everyone. And it just speaks to where the league is right now. And it's kind of crazy to think about.
For sure. I mean, it is the determining factor. And when just watching that title game, it's like, how many open shots are these guys missing that they would never get looks that open in playoff basketball in the NBA? You know, it's just like the amount of space and time you have to get off your shots in college is just so different. And the transition process is going to eat some guys up, you know. So you not only are you working on mastering a stroke that maybe you don't already have, but you're doing it at a much higher degree of difficulty in terms of the defense and what they can throw at you. So look, it's a lot easier said than done in terms of turning guys into shooters. That's why the success stories, you know, like the Kawhi Leonards or even like an Avery Bradley or whoever else you want to throw in there, I mean, those dudes deserve a lot of credit for beating the odds, because it's just really not a guarantee at all.
Yeah, well, and it's got to be tough to be a GM sort of looking at this, trying to project like development that is just like a total crapshoot. As far as I'm concerned, like there are a couple teams that I trust to teach shooting, like the Spurs, the Hawks, maybe one or two others. But like everybody else, it seems pretty random. And it's just amazing how much everyone has invested in this crazy process that like nobody really understands. So, but anyways, that comes in 3 months. More importantly, the playoffs are coming, and I feel like we should shift into preview mode pretty soon here. It's a little tough because we don't know the order, but on Friday, hit us up with questions. People always ask where to send questions. You can tweet to me on Twitter, at Andrew Sharp, or you can tweet to, you can DM, slide in Golliver's DMs at Ben Golliver, and I'm excited. We'll have fun. We've gotten a bunch of good questions over the past few weeks.
Oh yeah, I'm still getting great questions just around the clock all the time, every possible mode of communication. Guys, I really appreciate you for that. Couple things real quick. Go Dodgers.
Yeah.
Go T-Mobile. Check out that app that we mentioned. It's unbelievable. Get yourself the free MLB.tv. Andrew, I'm going to talk to you later this week.
All right, man. Take it easy. Go Dodgers.
5-star reviews.
Another great edition of Open Floor is in the books. Did you know Locked On has a daily podcast for all 30 NBA teams? If you're a Lakers fan, search Locked On Lakers. A Celtics fan, search Locked On Celtics. Warriors fans, search Locked On Warriors. Yes, all 30 NBA teams have a daily bite-sized podcast on the Locked On Podcast Network. Search on Apple Podcasts or Google Podcasts for Locked On, your favorite team. Or tell your smart speaker to play podcast Locked On, your favorite team.
It's the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.